This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
7:42, I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning. Joining us for the Israel Report this morning, Jonathan Feldstein, Genesis 1, 2, 3, Foundation. Three hot topics. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu heads to the United Nations General Assembly with a vow to confront Western recognition of Palestine. A Gaza-bound flotilla claims the drone harassment, while Italy and Spain send naval escorts. And fresh Israeli Houthi fire after Eilat drone strike. Let's separate the headlines and find out what is really going on. Jonathan, good morning. Thank you for joining us. First of all, did you have a good Chag? How was Rosh Hashanah?
It was very nice. We did extra grandparent duty because of sons and sons-in-law who are currently occupied in the IDF. But you know what? That's just a different form of worship. How was yours?
Yeah, it was very, very good as well. I have to say it was a very meaningful and very special time. Jonathan, how many? Obviously, you don't know a number, but how across Israel, how many families were? What types of numbers of families were in the position that yours was in, where people were stepping in, helping out because of family members engaged in the IDF?
Well, that's a great question. Some of them, of course, are young men who are not married, so there's not really helping out in terms of children or children-in-law. But if we 130,000 soldiers have been called up recently for the renewed or current Gaza operation, so let's assume that of 130,000, only half are married and maybe have children. So you're talking about tens of thousands of people who are away from their spouse and or children. And yeah, and that means parents and siblings and uncles and aunts and grandparents all stepping up. And you know, it's interesting. When I was in services, I had my three of my four oldest grandchildren with me, and they were little boys, and they're running around kind of crazy, and I thought they would be disruptive, but people understood just by seeing that there I am with the three little boys, that I'm occupying them because my son-in-law wasn't around, and they came up to me during and specifically afterward to say that what I was doing was avodat kodesh, holy work.
Right. Yes, because it really is. It's supporting those. It's supporting people so that they could do the other work that they need to do, which is
right.
Is military. It's an incredible thing. And in fact, those are still the fortunate ones that do have a support system around them to be able to rely on. So it was just interesting for me to hear how significant this is. Let's talk about Netanyahu at the United Nations. So before Wheels Up, even Netanyahu said he's going to denounce leaders for recognizing a Palestinian state in his speech. That was in the Times of Israel. What core message do you expect from Netanyahu at the UN General Assembly?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't know. Benny Gantz had a very good cogent article, I believe, in New York Times this week, explaining why the recognition of a Palestinian state is fictitious and problematic. I would hope that Netanyahu is taking some lines from him, because it was really that clear. You can't make up a state, you can't wish a state into existence, and you can't preclude, in this case, if there were ever to be a Palestinian state, and it's not just because of the nature of the neighbors, but of the governing agreement, which is Oslo from the 1990s, that all agreements, no final status things, are allowed to be unilateral, but must be negotiated. So what happened is, you see, it's not just the recent Western governments that have recognized this fictitious state, thinking that somehow that's going to preserve a two-state solution. It's nonsensical. I don't have a good analogy. I suspect that he'll speak about that a good bit. The question is whether he's going to say, going to go out there up to the line or even cross the line and say, if you've abrogated the Oslo Accords, which is the current agreement that we've been living by since the 1990s, then we are no longer bound by that either. And that means we can do what we want in Judea, Samaria, and Gaza. And I don't know, but I have to say, in the United Nations, in the court of public opinion, I just feel, Howard, that there aren't a lot of people to influence. While I was logging in to speak with you today, I saw a text message from a pastor friend in the United States asking for my, I didn't answer him yet, but asking for my advice to speak on why Christians support Israel. So there are people who need to understand an important and nuanced message. I just feel that as the Palestinians are calling for a massive walkout on Netanyahu this afternoon in New York, the people who want to listen will listen. The people who listen will listen to prove what they already think, and most other people won't listen. So I don't know what kind of an impact, regardless of what he says, other than playing to his audience at home.
So also CNN late last night or early this morning published an article that is well worth reading. And I don't say that often about a CNN article. so therefore, you have to take me seriously. And what they were doing is they interviewed a senior Hamas official, and that is talking to him. It was this Ghazi Hamad. And they were talking to him about whether he has any regrets about October 7th. And he says, this is a quote from him, "You know what is the benefit October the 7th now? If you look at the United Nations General Assembly yesterday, when 194 people opened their eyes and looked to the atrocities, to brutality of Israel, and all of them, they condemn Israel. We waited for this moment for 77 years. I think this is a golden moment for the world to change history." So it's remarkable because he has no regret about the death of civilians in Gaza, which is just insane. Insane. He wouldn't even, and then they showed him on the iPad the suffering in Gaza, and he says, I know, I've seen it. I know people are suffering. He says, but it was basically, it was worth it.
Well, refreshing that CNN exposed that. But again, it's people who will listen with an open mind really aren't going to, there aren't going to be a lot that are going to be influenced at this point. And that's important. That's good for us. That's good for people who are listening to your show and get it, but don't know the detail and need that wind in the sail in order to continue the struggle, the fight for truth. Let's talk next week and see how he's received, but I suspect he'll have a chart or two. I expect he will have a lot of rhetoric that plays to the audience that makes up his government here. I wish he were coming with a solution. I wish he were going to say, yeah, we're willing to let in all the humanitarian aid. I wish he would follow my solution, because I still find that it's the best one, to have Christians be responsible for a rebuild and have a condominiumization of Gaza. But he's I think being responsive, so it'll be interesting to see what he says, and it'll be interesting to see the nature of his meeting next week with Trump.
Do you think that he can repair, while he's there, repair any of the damage and the the sliding in terms of relationships with some of the European leaders. And I'm not talking about Spain, because I think that is, they are too far gone. But there must be a fair amount of European leaders who are still somewhat ambivalent.
I don't know, but I think that if he were interested in repairing relationships, unless he's inviting Macron and Keir Starmer to Shabbat dinner in his hotel tonight and having a candid conversation over a bottle of kosher French wine, I don't see that as being the venue. He should have been on the phone with them directly, off the record, on the record, trying to influence. But I don't think that the brash public statements are helping. And if I had $1 million in my pocket, I would put $900,000 on the fact that nothing he's going to say. He'll speak truth, but I don't think anything he's going to say is, it's not going to pivot the European leaders. But if reports are correct that European polls are showing that the French and the British don't support the recognition of a Palestinian state, which is hard for me to believe, but I'll go with it. Then maybe he'll create problems for Macron specifically, whose status and government is also very weak, and maybe Macron will pivot. But I don't know how you go backward from recognizing a fake state. I don't know how you undo that.
Yeah, it's a question, and certainly I don't have the answers. Let's talk about Houthis and Yemen. A Houthi drone hit an Eilat hotel early in the week, injuring 20 people. Israel struck back at Sana'a, and that was the next day. Despite an earlier U.S. Houthi ceasefire for Red Sea shipping, Houthis vowed to keep targeting Israeli-linked vessels. So where are we with this? There's also talk about a potential Houthi, more significant Houthi attack on Israel. What do we know about this?
Well, what you missed is that within the 24 hours of the Houthi drone attack on the hotel in Eilat, last night at about 10 p.m. here, there was a missile attack as well. It's funny, our air raid siren didn't seem to work properly, and I think we were supposed to have gone to our bomb shelters, but up to 2 to 3 million Israelis were sent to the bomb shelters about 10 p.m. Last night again, and apparently that was following a major attack with 20 Israeli planes and 65 sorts of bombs launched at the Houthis. I don't know if the Houthis are preparing for a much more massive wave. What I don't understand is why we have, until this point, left anything that's under Houthi control. I don't mean massive destruction of the cities and villages in parts of Yemen that they control, but I don't understand why any thing or any person connected to the Houthis in a significant way is still standing. And there may be another massive attack. I don't know how much they have the ability to launch multiple missiles at the same time, but it's certainly disruptive to have them launch one and send 2 to 3 million of us to the bomb shelter. And I will say this, going back to the earlier part of the conversation, we all kind of in my house entered Rosh Hashanah this week for 2 days, wondering not if, but when the Houthis would interrupt our holiday. And this time they didn't.
So are people still taking it seriously enough?
No. People are getting fed up, and I've heard many people say that they don't want to waste their time going to the bomb shelter. My next door neighbor said if he's in bed, he's not getting out of bed. It is a frustration. Sure. So people are getting tired of it. And unlike the war with Iran, where we would have tens or more actually making it through and coming into Israeli territory at one time, we have one at a time. And even if one is blown up, the shrapnel is statistically insignificant, though these missiles are huge, 12 or so meters long, and one large chunk of it can do a lot of damage. So I think people should take it seriously, but legitimately people are getting fed up, tired. My sense is it's angering, because it feels like one of the most backwards countries in the world still is maintaining this ability to shut down and even strike portions of Israel on a not inconsistent basis.
Well, I would say equally and maybe even more irritating, but that may be just me, is the flotilla. This has been the most boring flotilla in the history of the world. There's no doubt about that. But Italy and Spain have now dispatched naval vessels to assist or escort the civilians on the global Sumud flotilla. Spain says it poses no threat. Israel reiterates that it shouldn't breach a naval blockade and should dock in Ashkelon. What is the latest on this?
Well, the latest is that Israel has offered to offload all of the whatever humanitarian supplies that are on these boats and deliver them directly, which has been rejected by the people in the flotilla, underscoring that they're really more about publicity and giving Israel a black eye than actually getting any humanitarian supplies into Gaza. I think it's a very big problem in escalation that you've got Spain and Italy offering their ships to protect the flotilla. I'm taking it to an extreme, but that could escalate into a European conflict, which means NATO, which means involving our trigger-happy friends in Turkey who are part of NATO protecting the flotilla because Spain and Italy's ships may be under I don't know if attack, but certainly being pushed away if they come into Israeli waters. And if they come into Israeli waters without permission, that's a blatant act of aggression. So the truth is, I would put them on barges and I would drag them into Gaza and I would let them all stay in Gaza. Just leave them there with their phones. Who cares? Let them exist and show their humanitarian support and let them plead after 3 days to get out. But it's coming as a big pain in the you know where for Israel, and it just seems to be yet another joke that now not just taking over public spaces in Western cities, but taking over the high seas and the Mediterranean, that they're going to just drag all these boats into Israeli territory and think that they can effectively do anything to benefit the Gazans, which is ridiculous. It's really more of a show about making Israel look bad. And it will.
Because last time, as I said to an earlier guest, last time was a bit of a disappointment for them because there was really no drama. The most exciting part was this turkey sandwich. But this time there's a lot more. There's a lot more boats. There's a lot more high profile people. There's certainly a lot more scope for publicity stunts, and that makes it much more potentially much more dangerous. Do we have any idea of when these ships are meant to become get near to Israeli territorial waters?
What I read and I think I understand today is that they're in Greek waters now or near Greece. I'm not really sure. They seem to be bouncing back and forth between continents, the northern coast of Africa, now southern coast of Europe. So that means a few more days, just in time for Yom Kippur. Maybe they'll repent before then and turn around. I don't know.
Yeah, well, let's hope. And Jonathan Feldstein, thank you as always, and wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. And if we don't speak to you before, a meaningful Yom Kippur, and hopefully a peaceful one. It is 8:00.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.